Blog Talk Radio.
Hello. Gentlemen, and welcome to the backyard. This is Margaret Marshall, your host. And for our loyal listeners, you know that we gather here in the backyard each Wednesday to celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich culture of Jamaica, land we love. So I want to thank the listeners online and the listeners who are listening on their computers. And I apologize again that I'm unable to interact with you, but I'm going to take care of that soon. So, as I always do, I ask you to pretend that you're under your favorite tree or on the beach or wherever you used to relax in Jamaica when you were growing up there or visited there. Just pretend that's happening right now, no matter what part of the world you're tuning in from. So I want to welcome you this evening and to tell you that last week we celebrated coffee. And this week we are going to be celebrating cocoa, as we Jamaicans know it, but how it inspired what is loved all over the world and people can't do without their comfort food, which is chocolate. So I want to remind you that this is a Labrish, and what we want to do here is to leave some lasting memories of people who just want to have their voice in cyberspace, especially if they have some stories about growing up in Jamaica. Because I'm encouraging all the senior citizens and the young folks too to leave some living memories of things that happened during their time, because we know there's a lot of things that are happening now that because of the technology, it's being documented. But when we seniors were growing up, there was no such documentation going on. So we are creating something here for our children and grandchildren to listen to and hear our voices and learn about the things that we're passionate about and things that happened in Jamaica, perhaps that we didn't even know about when we were growing up there. So this evening, I'm going to be giving some information that I gathered from Pieces of the Past, which is a wonderful segment that the Gleaner Company has on their website. And there are several researchers that contributed to that. Last week we quoted from Dr. Tortello's information on the coffee. I did not see there are a number of places that they got this information from that I'm going to be sharing with you. And, of course, I want you to also know that if you have some relevant information about what we're going to be talking about this evening, feel free to share it with us. And, you know, I have many listeners that are coming by now, not during the showtime, but the shows are being downloaded quite frequently now, so I suppose the word is getting around. So again, I want to welcome you this evening and to invite you to get into that real relaxed, no problem man mood that we know so well from our culture. So we're going to start off with, I'd never really heard of this person before, because I don't know about others, but I did not learn a lot of Jamaican history like we're sharing now, and that is available to us now through pieces of the past in the Gleaner and some of what Dr. Lumsden has researched and put together on her website. So I'm just like a kid in a candy shop, because every week I am exploring and learning, and guess what, folks? It keeps you young. So that's what I'm going to be forever young, because I'm getting all this exciting new neurons in my brain that's getting opened, and I'm learning all these cool things about my country and my culture that I never knew before. So here we go, and I'll be reading from the article from Pieces of the Past. Over the years, Jamaica's compelling natural beauty has attracted more than a few individuals of worldwide acclaim. One that immediately comes to mind is the swashbuckler movie hero Errol Flynn, who had an abiding love affair with Port Antonio. And some of our listeners will remember when we did our Discovered Jamaica One Parish at a Time. And if you haven't heard that segment, you know, you can always download it in our from our archives, because they're all there for you to listen to again or share with your, some of your people, that your friends or family that might have an interest. But we spoke about Errol Flynn's love affair with Jamaica, especially Port Antonio. Others include British writers Ian Fleming, the creator of the spy movies, you know, the James Bond movies. He had a love affair with Jamaica. Noel Coward, the award-winning playwright, both of whom were pulled to Jamaica's north coast. Yet centuries before they were famed British, there was a famed British physician, researcher, and writer who was Sir Hans Sloane, spelled S-L-O-A-N-E, whose 15-month sojourn in Jamaica would help define his life and greatly impact future scientific advances. So not only did our island, or has our island produced people who were born and raised there that long ago did great things, and we've spoken a lot about them. I mean, nurses, doctors, scientists, you know, that were Jamaican born and raised, but also people who just walked or visited our beautiful island were inspired and invigorated and just, I suppose, reborn or came into their own just by being there. So I know that people who have been there, or who we Jamaicans who have great memories of growing up there, no, we didn't even know how good it was until we left it. So I'm back to the article. You know, I have my sidebar all the time, and I'm always inviting my listeners online to hit one on their telephone if they'd like to join the Labrish, because for the foreigners who might not know what a Labrish is, I always have to give a little explanation, so those that know what it is already, just bear with me. A labrish in my mind, or what I remember, is when people got together, not necessarily to gossip. Perhaps we did a little of that too, but people of like minds that would discuss a subject or had an interest in a particular subject or thing. So that's what a labrish is. And I am taking it a step further, or my passion is to just labrish a thing about things that I love and I'm interested in. And I just love the fact that I was blessed to be born and raised in Jamaica. So if anyone wants to join the labrish, hit 1 on your telephone so I can see a raised hand on my keyboard. And just like when you were a kid and in school, you had to put up your hand, I'll open up the mic and you can join the labrish. So I'm looking for some raised hands when you think you want to talk. Anyway, let's talk about Sir Hans Sloane. He was born in Ireland, actually, in 1660 to a family of relative prosperity. As a boy, he's said to have been fascinated by natural history. It is no wonder that as an adult, he was educated in chemistry, anatomy, general medicine, and botany in both England and France. He was one of few people in history to receive a medical degree without having a bachelor's degree. As a young fellow of the prestigious scientific group, the Royal Society, in 1687, Sloane was given the chance to travel to Jamaica as personal physician to the new governor, Christopher Monk, M-O-N-C-K. He was the second Duke of Admire. Knowing that this would give him the chance to make new observations of the natural world and collect many number of plant specimens, he eagerly embarked on his new adventure. During the ocean voyage, Sloane exercised his natural curiosity by recording the habits of seabirds and incidents of and different things about the water. And as I talk about these historic people, and I think, you know, people are people no matter where they're from. And I find so many lessons in researching these people from the past that can relate to the now and hopefully the next generation about ideas and how the mind works and about passion for anything. Because everyone that we have featured so far, we celebrate. It's because of a passion or an idea and persistent that why we're talking about them today. Because, and you know, I could go on and on about how some of them got started, but I get so fascinated because in every one of these stories where people have made a difference in the world, it goes back to them having an idea, having a desire, having a passion, having a love for something. Sometimes it wasn't easy for them to get what their idea across or what they wanted. In this man's case, he happened to be born into, you know, some sort of prosperity. And so it happened all across the board. We had other stories that were people who were not born privileged. You know, they were slaves or ex-slaves or poor, and yet they did something. And I'm saying all this to say, you know, it's just like now that there are some people who, with passion, no matter what their circumstances, with desire, they seem to excel. So I'm hoping that the young folks or the older folks who have access to younger folks that they can support or encourage, they'll find some nuggets of wisdom in some of these stories of the past. So here I go back. Sometimes I have to take a break from reading all of these things and just put in my own twist. So I'm waiting for other people who might have an idea or a different idea about the story to join me, because sometimes it gets sort of lonely, and I'm wondering if this is really elaborate. Anyway, I'm back to my notes. Now, during the relatively short time in which Sloane remained on the island, he gave his deep curiosity about natural history and full rein to ways he would never again be able to. He made extensive notes on local flora and fauna, local customs, and even earthquakes, eventually compiling a massive collection of some 800 specimens. Now, remember, this man was a doctor. This was sort of his sidekick. I mean, I find that very fascinating. Sloane was known for his exactness, and he would spend hours documenting and drawing anything he was unable to preserve. If he was able to preserve, it's fine, but if he couldn't, he would be so detailed about writing about it and documenting it, because he knew perhaps he wouldn't have it the next day or the next month, or he couldn't take it back with him. Yet he was not so completely seeped in science that he missed chances to invest in sugar and other commodities that were, I suppose, available at the opportunities at the time on the island. Chances to invest in sugar and C-I-N-C-H-O-N-A, Chinona? I don't know how to pronounce that. Oh, I see a hand. Perhaps they can help me out. It seems like it was some sort of material or fruit or plant or something. Good evening. This is Margaret in the backyard, and I'm opening up the bike to 631-451. Who do we have?
Good evening, Margaret. This is Janine.
Hi. Welcome, Janine. Where are you calling from?
Long Island.
Oh, okay. Welcome to the backyard, Labrish.
Thank you. I don't have a comment as yet because I really don't know much about what you're saying, but I know it's easier when you have someone on with you, so I'm here to give you that support.
Oh, well, thank you so much, darling. Now I have company beside me in my easy chair.
Right.
Okay. What are you sipping this evening? Last week we were sipping coffee. Do you have any cocoa? Chocolate?
Not right now, but...
Okay.
Do you remember
those chocolate teas?
Oh, yes. Fries Coca.
All right. Okay. So let's talk about this very fascinating man. And so let me go on here with the story. No, that plant was used to make medicine, quinine, as we used to call it, which began to be used in the 17th century to treat malaria. Sloane himself used it to make an ointment to treat eye ailments. Now, remember, this man was a doctor. That's why I found it so fascinating that even though his discipline was to be a doctor, he was trained to be a doctor, he just had a fascination for nature. And, of course, he was apparently a good student when he was learning. So he was involved in science and botany and all of that, you know, well-rounded.
So he was born in Jamaica, but he...
No, he wasn't born in Jamaica. He was just there for a very short time. He was born in Ireland, actually.
Oh, okay.
But he was sent to Jamaica to be the private physician of this lord or the duke. You know, who was there at the time. No, we're talking about 1660, honey.
Right.
You know, long before our time.
Right, right. So
okay. Now, he, in 1689, this duke died. And so I suppose he didn't have a job. You know, Sloane
yeah.
accompanied his widow, the Duke's widow, back to England, along with his collection of specimens, the first to be brought to England from the Caribbean. He stayed on in the Duchess's household as her personal physician for close to 5 years. Now, soon after, he published a list of the plants he had collected in Jamaica.
Okay.
Now, he spent time meticulously comparing his findings with those of other specimens, ending up with a groundbreaking study that reduced the number of specimens down to one. His work remains useful to this day for both science and historic research. Isn't that amazing?
Yes, it is.
Because I am thinking that because he was a doctor and doing the doctor thing, this was just more like a hobby. But because he was so detailed in his description, and I suppose he was so passionate with finding new plants and things about the island, that he, when he took it back with him, he published this. That was really the foundation of it, of a lot of things, not just for Jamaica, but for the scientific world. So this is really historical, but the sign for me is that he had the passion, and then Jamaica produced the place for him to just really express it that made a difference to mankind, you know, because everybody studying science, and especially those kind of science now, benefit from what he did in 16-whatever.
Right. So although he wasn't... born in Jamaica, he went there, and he took something from Jamaica that made him somebody.
Right. Celebrated to this year.
Right.
Incidentally, he was born in Killarney, Ireland, and they have a website. They are having his birthday is in September. And they're having a 350th, it's 350 years ago, that's how long. They are having a big celebration around him and his discovery. You know, it's just fascinating to me.
But what they allot all this to, are they referring to him as...
Well, I'll tell you further down the story. Well, when, you know, he started, the Natural Museum in England is a big thing. You know, it's because of his research from Jamaica that all of that started.
Right.
That is the connection.
Right.
And I don't get to the chocolate yet.
Oh, okay.
So, now, several years after his return from Jamaica, Sloan married the widow of a wealthy Jamaican planter, thus becoming a very wealthy man in his own right, a fact that proved useful in establishing a successful medical practice. Now, what they're saying here is that although he was in Jamaica where he had access to whatever make the quinine, he was not going in that direction. He was too busy doing his thing.
Yes,
you know, that he was not after the money then.
Yes.
You know, like a lot of people now will jump on a bandwagon of whatever is happening because of the money.
Right, right.
You know, and not necessarily that they have a passion for that industry or that product or whatever. It's just the money.
It's nothing else. Yeah,
so that's one of the points. That's what I read into this story.
Mm-hmm.
So where am I now? Okay, so in the 1700s, he published a more extensive natural history of Jamaica in two volumes, and it have the numbers here. They also contained information of his visits to a few other West Indian islands, including Barbados and St. Kitts. By this time, he had begun to receive acclaim for his research and writing, but he continued to practice medicine on a regular basis. Indeed, Sloan went on to have an extremely illustrious medical career. He was appointed as a physician extraordinaire to Queen Anne and King George. He was president of the Royal College of Physicians. He succeeded somebody else, Sir Isaac Newton, and physics of the Royal College of Physicians. He did a whole lot of things. He succeeded somebody else, Sir Isaac Newton, and just have a lot of acclaims. Now, he dedicated the first volume. Remember, all of this now is the specimens that he took from Jamaica.
Right, right.
Which led him to all of these other scientists.
Yes.
You know, he was just a physician.
Right, right.
But he got to be involved with all of these other renowned scientists because of his work.
Yes.
Now, he dedicated the first volume of his Natural History to Queen Anne and the second to King George. And that's when he was conferred with his sirship, I suppose. And I have to remind our listeners that I'm not always politically correct. This is correct. This is a fun show. And the format here is to celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. And boy, are we diverse. Okay, Sloan is credited with promoting many public health care initiatives, such as the establishment of a foundation, Foundling Hospital, a hospital for orphans, as well as the introduction of inoculation against smallpox. Although an unpopular practice at the time, Sloan did inoculate members of the royal family. Now, Sloan never lost his passion for collecting that was so well exercised in Jamaica. By the time of his death in 1753, at the age of 93, all the rooms and hallways in his house was filled to overflowing with objects of all kinds and shapes, and with plants and animals and germs and gems and coins and many more, as well as his own drawings and notes. His house had become a museum of sorts and was a major attraction. Aware of the value of his collection and harboring a distinct desire to preserve it in perpetuity, he included a provision in his will that all the objects in his collection remain together in and about the city of London. He offered his collection to the city of London for £20,000, payable to his daughters, a large sum for the time, but an amount far less than the collector's actual worth. Funds from a lottery were used to make the purchase during the year of his death, and the British Museum of Bloomsbury was created. Now, over a century later, in the early 1880s, the Museum of Bloomsbury's collections were transferred to a new home, the British Natural History Museum at South Kensington. Sir Hans Sloane, noted physician, scientist, and collector, who had spent defining moments of his life on the island of Jamaica in 1680, had become the founder of the celebrated British Natural History Museum. His Jamaican Natural History Collection, in many ways, it's the original nucleus of the museum, of course.
1963, the Natural History Collection became its own entity, recognized as separate from the rest of British Museum's collectors. Today, Britain's Natural History Museum spans the gamut of the natural sciences and stands as one of the best in the world. Now, Sloan Sojourn in Jamaica can also be indirectly credited with introducing Europe to the pleasures of eating chocolate.
Yeah.
Whilst there, meaning Jamaica, Sloan became fond of a local drink known as cocoa. At first, he couldn't, it said abide, A-B-I-D-E, its bitter taste, but found it pleasing once mixed with milk. They didn't say if it was coconut milk.
Condensed milk.
Yeah, well, I don't know if they had it in those days, but
no,
I know they had coconut
milk.
Remember, we're talking 16-something now.
Yes, yes.
He took the recipe home to England, and soon many druggists were manufacturing it as a medicine known as Sir Hans Sloane's milk chocolate. The recipe was eventually taken up by the Messrs. Cadbury in the 19th century, and as they say, the rest is history.
Yeah.
So there you go, the birth of the Cadbury's milk chocolate.
Oh, my favorite.
Was actually inspired by this man, because he was introduced to it in Jamaica. I was so fascinated by that that, of course, I went to the Cadbury's website, and I went to just Googled, you know, Sir Hans Sloane, and boy, did I get a lot of websites talking about him. I mean, most of them in England, talking about, you know, the fact that he discovered the chocolate on his, you know, during his time in Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
Now, cocoa beans have been around from the 15th century, you know, 15-something.
Yeah.
The cocoa beans itself was not new. And in those days, it was the food of the gods. I mean, common people didn't have access to it. You know, it was traded all over. I forgot where it was found the first time. But, you know, the Greeks and all of those people knew about it. But as what he developed was mixing it with the milk to come up with a more pleasing, not only a more pleasing
taste,
not only a more pleasing, because of course it had all sort of it claims to have all sort of healing, you know, it's in its natural form.
Well,
it was an aphrodisiac. It was known to help, you know, with your moods and different things, you know, the cocoa beans itself.
Yeah, they're saying that it's very good for your stomach.
Right. So it was being used for those purposes, and that's why at first his formula was sold to the druggists. You know, the drugstores would sell it at the time. Now, the native people at that time were not using it the way he formulated it while he was there, because I suppose it was not suited for the English palate, you know, sensitive palate. And he wasn't one of the gods that used to chew on it for whatever reason. But he refined it, put it that way. Now, I did a little research about the Cadbury people, and they have a fascinating story, too, that really has nothing to do with Jamaica, but really ties in. You know, they bought the formula from him.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. At first, they used to sell, the Cadbury started out, they're Quakers. And the Quakers were not allowed to go to college. They were not allowed in certain, talk about discrimination, you know, this has been going on for centuries. and in those, it was people of the same ethnic background and discriminating against each other. And here is religious, you know, they were different from the Church of England or the Catholics or whatever. They were Quakers, and they couldn't do certain things. So they went into the business of, the first business they had was really teas that they were selling. Then he came back from Jamaica with this milk chocolate thing, and they started to sell his version of it. And then they eventually, I suppose, bought the formula from him, and that is really the birth of the Cadbury's milk chocolate. That's how it all started.
So although he took all this from Jamaica to England, they are taking the credit for it.
Well, it's not even a matter of taking the credit, because they paid him for the formula. You
yes.
see where I'm coming from?
Yes.
They bought the formula from him in 16 whatever, and then they found that they were selling more of the milk chocolate than cheese.
Oh.
So they're business people, so they got together and said, hey, we got to find more ways of developing this mixture, you know, solidify it. And there was somebody who came up with a machine in, I don't remember if it was Germany or some other country, that could process the beans where it would take the fat out and certain things. So they really got involved in the making of chocolate because of the formula.
Where did they continue to get the beans from? They had to get it from Jamaica.
No, not necessarily. I suppose the beans he got, his beans were from Jamaica. But in those days, you know, there were other people trading.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't say where the Cadbury people got their beans from.
Oh.
That was not specified. I see another hand. I'm glad someone else wants to join the Labrish. The board is quite lit up here, and I'm sure there are people listening online. But I have someone from 718-379. That number sounds familiar. Welcome to the Labrish. This is Margaret in the backyard. Who do I have?
Hi there. This is Lay from the Bronx, the home of the
New York Yankees. Don't we know it?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
How are you this evening, Mr. Lay from the Bronx?
Well, I am so-so.
Okay. We know what that means. Comme ci, comme ça.
Yes, Janine was making a point about where some of that cocoa came from.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, cocoa beans, they has to be in a certain climate, Jamaica being, the Caribbean being one of that kind of climate.
Right.
It has to be almost humid, warm and humid.
Warm. Mm-hmm.
And you know we have that.
Mm-hmm.
But cocoa beans also came from Ghana, Ivory Coast, Brazil, because you know they have the wet forest there, the perfect climate, Nigeria, and later on from what's that place? Malaysia.
Mm.
So when you talk about quality now, that's a whole different thing. Like almost like the coffee we discussed.
Right.
Last.
Different climates affect certain the beans or the pods or whatever it is differently.
Yeah. So you'll find that they'll favor certain beans from certain places.
Mm-hmm.
Jamaica being one of the ones.
Maybe
that
sunshine. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's that's true, but the method that they use to produce the cocoa is more adaptable for the good quality from places like in the West Indies, Latin America, and Malaysia.
Mm-hmm.
And the method that they use was called the box method.
Oh.
That's what I saw.
What is the box method?
I was hoping I wouldn't ask, but after, you know, they go through the process of picking the beans from the pods, they would literally box them. Put the beans in a box. This is after they would dry the beans to
I was just going to ask you that, if they don't lay it out to dry.
Well, they don't lay it out the same way as the coffee. They actually put them on top of each other, but they keep turning them.
Is that for moisture or something?
Yes, yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And as it's being dried out, there is some moisture in the beans that they make sure that they trap,
mm-hmm.
because that later on is gonna become the cocoa.
Right, right. Oh, okay.
But in all of this process, they do it to such an extent that they can box it box the beans and ship them wherever they're going. Like in this case, it would be to England,
mm-hmm.
To the Cadbury factory. So I was reading something about the it takes a lot of cocoa beans to make 1 pound of the raw,
the powder.
Powder. Well, not so much a powder yet, but the initial stage that I was just describing, it takes like 40 beans to come up with in a pod to make a pound.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm sure that because of the size of the cocoa beans, like the coffee, it has to be hand-picked.
You bet.
You just can't shake it off the tree or something like that, and they're small. So it really takes a lot of man power, you know, labor.
Labor and
a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
Labor and yeah. I imagine in present day production, they found a way to make it.
Oh, I am sure with the technology the way it is now. And, you know, a lot of what we're getting now, even in the chocolate, it's been enhanced and popped up and other stuff is in it.
And
it's very few. And there are several websites that are talking about his preciseness and his thing for details. They're using that to promote their chocolate.
Because
it has his name on it. But the point is that all of this was started because this man had a passion and a drive, and he was precise and correct and detailed. And look what he did for the world. And he was not doing it for money at the time. You know, he happened to be a privileged person, but according to these documentations, he missed a lot of times when he could have capitalized on other things, but he stayed focused, and that is what I hope that our listeners will draw from some of these stories that I'm bringing out, you know, to enlighten ourselves about, especially as it relates to Jamaica. And I am hoping that the seniors and the juniors and everybody will see that, you know, over time, you know, we're just humans. And there are people who get ideas and who dedicate themselves to bringing these ideas out one way or another. And what a difference they have made in the world, really. And we are just fortunate that Jamaica has really produced so much of them and inspired so many people, some of those I talked about, you know, the writers and all of, and we still continue to do that today.
Well, Madge, if he's from England and he went there to live.
He's from Ireland. He was born in Ireland.
Ireland. He went there because because he was taking care of that person.
Right.
In all honesty, we didn't produce him because he just...
No, I'm not saying we did.
But
that was not the whole implication here.
He didn't start out being a Jamaican. But what I want to ask, if he didn't discover the coca, then nobody in Jamaica did?
No. He didn't discover the coca. Coca was already there.
Yeah, but he discovered the beans to make the chocolate and the coca. When I say coca, I mean, you know, the coca tea. He was
mm-hmm.
the one that discovered it. So I am just wondering, if he didn't discover it, would it have been just a plant that nobody realized?
No, I'm sure that, you know, well, it depends on what you believe. I believe that sometimes a lot of people get an idea. A lot of people, he happened to be exposed to the beans. He happened to be exposed to the drink that the natives were, or how they were using it at the time.
So they were using it.
Oh, yes, they were using it, but not as a cocoa drink.
Oh, so what were they using it for?
It didn't say. It didn't say, but it was not in the formulation that he could, it wasn't palatable. He found it repulsive.
So did he come up with the name coca, or that was the original name?
I don't think he came up with the name of the coca beans. No.
Okay.
Because coca was being used over the world. I mean, it's been around, it was discovered, just like we talked about the coffee being discovered because the goats used to eat it and jump up and down because they got a high.
Right.
You see, the connection there is that he was actually a scientist. He
right.
was a biologist and stuff. And he would have been curious to know the properties of the cocoa. And the cocoa wasn't, as I mentioned before, it was not unique to any one place. The people in these different countries that we listed knew the value of cocoa and
only the elite.
Yeah.
Could have it.
Sure.
So actually, one of the documentation on him talked about, because his formulation made it more affordable to the masses.
Yeah.
You see where I'm coming from?
Yes.
And it all started with the experiment he did with refining it into a drink or producing it into a drink. So he started to, his formula mixed it with milk that made it, I suppose, softer on the palate or smoother.
And not only that,
of the bitterness.
No,
mm-hmm.
not just that, but the properties that you needed to hold it together, so to speak.
Right. Because remember how when we used to grate the chocolate, it
right.
had to boil for a while before it sort of, you know, got mm-hmm. itself together.
Right.
Yeah.
It dissolved, sort of. It had a lot of fat in it.
So he must have figured in detail the recipe, so to speak, or whatever.
Right. Developed the recipe using, while he was in Jamaica, using the cocoa beans there.
Yeah.
That's what all started it. And so he was the first person, many of the websites say he was the first person that could put together something that everybody could enjoy. Because there's only, first of all, only special people would eat it. And I suppose they could eat it. And it was sort of, as they say, food for the gods.
Right. So this is where Cadbury came in to produce a solid milk.
Right. From the liquid, they really became interested in refining it more. But it all started with his formula.
And don't forget now, Cadbury also owned the Fry's company. That
right. Well, that came after. We're talking about 16-something. The Cadbury company actually started as a company. They merged with Strips and other things. There's a lot of details. And for our listeners, let me just let the people on the board and who might come by later on, you know, most of what the material I use, it's available on the internet. We just lavish about it in our own style, and hopefully our listeners will find it entertaining and enlightening. And I know that for me, I just love research and I love history. And I also love the fact that I can find something that happened long ago that can relate to now and hopefully people in the future can see similarities with ideas and focus and passion and just being, you know, excited about something. Because every story that has made a difference to the world, every one of them, we have all found that there are similarities in the people that we talk about. Don't you think?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's a drive. It's a passion. It's a commitment. Just about everybody, you know, rich, poor, black, white, foreigner, Jamaican, it's the same.
Well, these people were trailblazers, you know. They
oh, man. And I just picture those times being, you know, think of the transportation, the communication, you know, even they say he documented in detail, he personally documented in detail all the information about these plants and specimens that he found, especially even things that he couldn't preserve, like I suppose worms or whatever, that he couldn't carry back. He took back 800 specimens with him to England. Nobody else had ever done that. Nobody else had ever done that for any of the countries they traveled to. Nobody. He was the first. And he didn't go there for that. Nobody paid him. You know, it was just something he did on his own.
Yeah.
That's what I find fascinating about all these stories. Because, you know, the common thread that makes us human and makes us who we are is always there. So we can find, it doesn't matter whether they were born in Jamaica or born in this case, he was born in Ireland. But he had the drive, he had the passion, just like how some of the people we spoke about that were trailblazers were born in Jamaica but didn't do their thing there. They went to some part of Africa or Australia or someplace and blossomed into or perfected whatever their passion was. And to me, I am just totally fascinated with all of that. So that's the link. But, you know, when you think of how even our not only our motto, which is out of many one people, but the fact that we say no problem, man, that just the climate, the air just puts you, I heard a tourist describe it once when I was on a visit myself, as one big tranquilizer. Just being there on the beach or wherever they were in the mountains is just like a tranquilizer. So what better place to remember? It has inspired so many people for one thing or the other. We look at all the musicians that we talked about from long ago to now. And I'm sure this happens all over the world. I'm just celebrating that because, you know, I am at the stage in my life where I can relax, do the research, and just share it with the rest of the world. So with that said, I want to thank all our listeners. The board is full. I know that my loyal fans from the New York area are always supporting me on the show with joining the Labrish, and I really hope that some of the other listeners will raise their hands and put their 2 cents in I mean, it's worth a lot more, very valuable, you know. But we also have a website, which is backyardlabish.com, and you can make suggestions for the show or send me information about an article you would like to be discussed. As I say, everything here is focused on celebrating, enlightening, and preserving. So with that said, unless some of my listeners would like to weigh in this evening, we are going to be signing off in a couple of minutes. So, Miss Janine,
yes,
I want, is it okay if I ask our listeners to hold your aunt in their thoughts?
Oh, yes, please do.
Would you tell us a little bit? She was one of our guests one night. It's the 96-year-old senior whose memory was 94, whose memory was impeccable about where she grew up in Jamaica. And we had her on not so long ago, but she's not too well now. And Janine, is there any good news on her recovery?
Well, so far she is in and out of consciousness, but still not responding. So.
And would you tell the listeners her name again? As her show
Gloria
is in the archives. Pardon?
Gloria Stewart.
Yes, and the title of that show was a conversation with a senior. What parish was she from?
Trelawney.
Trelawney, who told us about growing up in Trelawney and dating and going to school, which we encourage you, if you have a senior in your family that would like to share some life stories, real life stories of when they grew up in Jamaica, do let us know, and we would like to feature them, because we think that if, I don't know if any of these people that we discuss, if their generations of their tens, whatever, would go to the show and listen, but you never know. You know, we don't know what it's going to be like when we are not here anymore, but I don't think that anybody's going to mess with cyberspace. I think it's going to be here forever. What do you think, Mr. Lay, from the Bronx?
Well, it's, you know, it's not like in the past when you had a faded out picture.
Right, right, right.
And
just think of it now with this man, even his drawings, you know, of certain things that he could not take back with him. I am sure, I didn't have time to really explore his website, but the town he was born in is planning a big celebration in September. There are several events about chocolate, about his scientific research. I mean, they're really doing it up. In September 2010, it will be 350 years since when he was born. You know, it's his birthday, so they're having a birthday thingy.
September 2010, that's this year.
This the year, yeah. Mm-hmm, yeah.
And
so the point here is,
British Museum.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going
That's
to
what
look.
Got started by him.
Yeah.
You know, his research, really. And where he got all that material from was Jamaica.
Yeah.
So it's very significant.
I'm still a little baffled, though. I have to be honest in saying I'm still a little baffled, because if he's the one that came up with the idea for the cocoa and the chocolate, what was the plant? What was they doing?
No. He did not come up with the idea for the cocoa. The cocoa was already there and in other parts of the world. He came up with a formula, a recipe. Let's call it a recipe then.
I know the cocoa plant was there, but he came up with a formula. For the, when I say cocoa, I'm referring to the drink and the chocolate.
Oh, I see. You're returning to the drink and the chocolate.
And the chocolate.
No, well, it wasn't being produced in that form. It was not.
I know.
Even after it was not until many, many years after that the Cadbury brothers actually produced a chocolate bar.
I understand that, but my point is the plant was already there in Jamaica. He discovered what they could get from the plant, which was the cocoa drink and the chocolate. So before he did that, the plant was just there not being used.
No.
No, it was still used?
It was used by the natives that were there then in 16 whatever.
So then how comes he discovered then if they already knew what it was all about?
No, he refined, he took the cocoa beans and refined the process of making
it drinkable.
It's edible.
Drinkable. So what
edible.
Do they use it for then, the natives?
They use it for medicine. That's what it was used for. Medicine.
For medicine purpose.
Uh-huh, medicine. Not as a drink or a bar or in the form that it's used now.
You remember how our grandparents would take a leaf from plants and take a berry from plants and make something with it or treat themselves, not even knowing what they were doing, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
But they thought that some of these things had cures in it.
Okay.
So they
were using it for a different purpose. Then.
Right,
yes.
Right.
But it still had the name coca.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the biological name for coca is Theobroma coca.
Mm-hmm.
And from that, they just call it coca.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And it was actually grown in other parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
It was not only Jamaica. It's not only Jamaica that has the cocoa beans.
He took it one step further then.
Right.
Yes.
He was the first person to take the bean and make it into something else that, let's say, English people and other people could enjoy.
Enjoy.
Because the natives in Jamaica were using it in whatever form they were using it for medicine,
right.
Not as a what kind of food would you call it, like
a
dessert
or a
edible drink.
It's
it was not being used for that anywhere in the world. He was the first person to bring it to that stage.
Yes.
Using the bean that he discovered in Jamaica.
Right.
He didn't know it in England or Ireland during his doctor tenure as a doctor. And what some of the articles are saying that there were other things and other plants that perhaps had medicinal purposes, like the one that the quinine was made from, that he missed. Because he was not really doing it for money
right.
at the time.
You see, it's a little contrary because with the coffee, it was discovered by us and they knew right away what it was for. But, you know, I guess he took it one step further. They didn't know that you could have a drink or the candy from it.
Right. Well, the coffee was not really discovered by us, you know. The coffee was taken there. By one of the governors or some important person,
mm-hmm.
but the coffee was discovered somewhere else.
The Blue Mountain.
Because the goats used to eat it and get a high.
That's the Blue Mountain, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but not in Jamaica. It was this fact that the animals were responding to it.
Right.
Was not discovered in Jamaica. It was somewhere else.
Okay.
And
it was
taken to Jamaica. There were only four plants. One was missing, the ship sink. Remember that story?
Mm-hmm.
One of them ended up in Jamaica. And they started to cultivate it there.
Oh, okay.
So that is sort of different. The cocoa
yeah.
was native, was there growing.
Oh,
and the native people of the 16th, in 1669 was using it,
mm-hmm.
but as a medicine,
and
not as a dessert.
And when did he go to Jamaica?
In 1668. or in the 16 something. Hold on, in 1660.
Oh, okay.
And he spent 15 years there,
mm-hmm.
being a doctor to the, you know, the big shots then.
Yeah, yeah.
And in his spare time, he did, you know, his other stuff.
Yes.
And is in doing his other stuff that he encountered the cocoa.
Mm-hmm.
And he tasted it because apparently he was experimenting and didn't say he was experimenting with anything else, but who knows. You know, I make up my own stories.
Yes.
But anyway, it was repulsive to him. But I suppose he realized that it had potential, or he was just curious. And he refined, kept working it with different things, and then decided to put it with milk. But they didn't specify whether it was cow's milk or coconut milk. I don't even know if there was a lot of cattle on the island then. There was not a lot of details about that. Perhaps I can tie it up somehow, Janine, and give a little more clarity about how he got to the idea of putting the milk in it.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think this man was, you know, quite a genius.
Yeah, he sure was.
So,
I want to thank him for the Cadbury.
Oh, yes,
I
and, you know, it's still
that.
The best chocolate.
I think so, too.
Yeah, it's still the best chocolate. And there, people are still referring to him, you know, people who are carrying the Cadbury's chocolate and refined chocolate, is talking about all of these attributes that he had, that they're doing their thing with precision and all the good stuff, because he was such a... detailed person.
Mm-hmm.
So, as I say, I always try to tie in the human nature and that links us all together, because so many of our stories, as I said, this man happened to be privileged and was trained as a doctor. A lot of our stories that people made a contribution, at Jamaicans and people going to Jamaica, they were poor. I mean, and they had hardships, and they still did what they do that we are celebrating now.
Well,
so to me, that is the big story.
I have to admit that he really loved things from Jamaica, because then he ended up with a Jamaican wife too.
Well, yeah. His wife was born into one of the plantation owners,
mm-hmm.
of Jamaica, and she apparently was quite wealthy, so he was able to, I suppose, practice medicine more. He had a very successful career as a physician, and it reminds me about, you know, how you have people now in what would seem an illustrious career, and all of a sudden you hear they're not doing that anymore, and they're off in the mountains meditating or doing something else.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And people would perhaps think that's odd, but this has been happening for generations.
Yeah.
You know, when you look back in history, and my point is people are just people, and it's just wonderful to know how much we are alike, whether we are rich, poor, black, white, born in Africa, Europe, it doesn't matter. You know, we're all just
you're based,
people.
Well, the dong line is you have to follow your dreams.
Right.
I guess
so. And that's why I would like to use some of these stories to encourage the people. You know, we all should be passionate about life. You know, life is a gift that should be celebrated.
Yeah.
And no matter what's happening in our environment, no matter what the situation is, there's always things to celebrate.
Yeah.
So I am encouraging everyone, but especially the seniors, to celebrate life. And as I always end my shows, I want to thank you. All the lines are full. You're not putting up your hands, but I want to know that I know you're there. 954-608-7186. 973-973-373-301-942. And it goes on. And I really appreciate you, and I celebrate you, and I thank you so much for the support. Because, and for you, Janine, that's here every week, and Mr. Lay, home of the Yankees, man, I just thank you for being such a big fan. And I'm encouraging all our listeners to share the link. If they're on my list, just send the link to any of your friends that you think might be curious about Jamaica or might be curious about history, and just share. So I want to thank you. I see 301-942 wants to join the Labrish. We have a couple of minutes, so I've opened up the mic. So 301-952, you're live. This is Margaret in the backyard. Who do I have?
This is me, BJ. I was just calling to give my wishes to Janine and hope everything works out to the best, you know. These things happen, and we just have to be always be prepared for whatever may come along.
Thanks very much. I appreciate it. I just want to ask everyone to remember her in your prayers.
I sure will do that, and I'm always praying on a daily basis. I have a running conversation going all day.
Yes, well, you know, it's the only way. It's the only way. You have to pray without ceasing.
Yes.
Well, BJ, could you just tell our listeners what city you're calling from?
Silver Spring, Maryland.
Okay. Well, welcome, Silver Spring, Maryland. And thank you for being a good supporter.
God bless.
Yes. And we're going to be signing off now. So if anybody on the board want to say hi and bye, please do so now or forever. Not forever, but for tonight, hold your peace. So I see no hands are going up. So Margaret in the backyard is going to check off and hope you'll join me next week and send me ideas for what you'd like us to elaborate about.
Okay.
So good night and thank you. And make it a great week.
Bye.
Bye.
God bless.